Question. Are parents trying too hard to make their kids happy? And is that actually having the opposite effect? That's the claim of author and therapist in training, Lori Gottlieb. The title of her article in The Atlantic says it all, How to Land Your Kid in Therapy. She cites child psychologists who've been seeing what she sees in her practice, kids who come from loving parents who've been told all their life how great they are, who were happy, but now in their 20s, not so much. Lori has waded into controversy before. She's the author of the book Settling for Mr. Good Enough, telling women to get realistic about love and settle into marriage with a man, even if he's not perfect. Now her new controversy, she joins us from the studios of NPR West. Lori, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Lori, as we said, you're a therapist in training. Your sessions with these 20-somethings are still being supervised till you get your hours. But what are you seeing?
Well, you know, I think the thing is that when I was in grad school, we spent a lot of time focusing on attunement and attachment and secure attachment. And we were thinking, you know, that the kinds of patients we would see once we got into the clinic would be the people who didn't have enough of that.
And explain what attunement is.
Well, I think attunement is really understanding what's going on with your child so that, you know, if they're feeling sad, you don't go, oh, and we're going to Disneyland. You actually acknowledge that they're having that feeling.
And you were thinking you were going to see 20-somethings who didn't get enough of that when they were young.
Exactly. And what happened was I'd get people who would come in and they would say, you know, my parents were my best friends in the whole world and they did everything for me. Some of them were even paying for their therapy. And, you know, at a certain point, they started to wonder, well, why am I feeling so empty or why am I so confused or depressed or why do I have trouble committing to relationships or career choices? You know, and I think they were really struggling with sort of day-to-day things in the real world that they just hadn't experienced because their parents, who were perfectly well-intentioned, were kind of doing everything for them so that they never really had to experience challenge or failure before. And now they were, and it was really tough for them.
Parents who were too attuned. One of your patients, Lizzie, said she was just not happy because she felt less amazing than her parents told her she was.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that we're always telling our kids how fabulous they are. And, you know, we say good job, even like the 50th time they've gone down the slide. And they start to really, really feel like, wow, well, you know, I'm fabulous. And you do want your child to feel special, but you want your child to feel special to you as opposed to more special than any other human being on the planet. Because, you know, what one of those is sort of healthy self-esteem and the other case morphs into narcissism.
Okay, well, hold on right there. Isn't it possible that, you know, when patients in their 20s go into therapy, they may be in denial about their families. They may have this feeling of emptiness or sadness or depression, and they're not going to be disloyal to their family. It takes a long time for people to connect the pain that they have to a problem in the family. Isn't that true of therapy, that sometimes people are in denial about the way their family really was?
Oh, absolutely. I certainly see that all the time. I think what I'm noticing is that, you know, there really were cases with parents who were like kind, nice, well-meaning people. And there wasn't a lot of denial going on. And so I actually, you know, went out and reported this and talked to other psychologists about what they were experiencing also. And it seems to be something that's happening now where a lot of people are, you know, kind of the products of this kind of parenting. And it's really not having the desired result. And I'm not blaming parents, but I think that what I'm asking is for parents to look at what they're doing because they think that it's really going to help their children have a strong sense of self and have healthy self-esteem, when in fact, that's not what the result is.
Well, in fact, you spoke with Dan Kinlan, who's a child psychologist, a lecturer at Harvard, whose book is Too Much of a Good Thing, Raising Children of Character in an Indulgent Age. And he talks about our discomfort with discomfort. And because of that, he says, kids aren't developing psychological immunity.
Right. You know, it's kind of like the way that nowadays a lot of parents will, you know, carry a little bottle of Purell with them everywhere they go. And the doctors are saying, you know, they need to get some dirt and some germs on their hands because they won't develop immunity otherwise. And it's the same thing with getting kind of emotional germs with your kids. They need to have a little emotional dirt going on or else they don't develop any resilience. They don't develop coping skills. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of employers, and they're saying that a lot of these new employees who come in nowadays, these college grads, come in with this sense of entitlement, and they're very fragile, and they don't know how to deal with it when they're not getting constant praise, and they don't know how to work on teams really well. And I think that's partly because they really haven't experienced a lot of this stuff when they should have, which is when they were younger.
Well, as you say, in protecting our kids from unhappiness as kids, we're depriving them of happiness as adults. And Paul Bahn, a psychiatrist at UCLA, agreed with you and gives the example of toddlers, you know, as young as 1 and 2, never mind not letting our kids fail, not letting them fall. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, he was saying, you know, when you see this at the park all the time, when, like, you know, a kid falls down and the parents run over and swoop the kid up, and the kid hasn't even cried or had any reaction to it. They probably don't even know what happened yet, but the parent is already saying, "Oh, honey, are you okay? Oh, my goodness." And if you actually let the kid, you know, see what happens when the kid falls down, are they actually upset by it? And if they are, can you comfort them in a way that says, you know, it's okay. Of course you're upset. You fell down. That's okay. We do this a lot when the kids are older, too. Somebody will be sad, like her best friend moved away. And the parents will, of course, being good parents, will acknowledge that the child feels sad, but then try to fix it or change it. You know, like, oh, well, let's, you know, you have so many other good friends, and let's set up a play date with this child. And, you know, let's call the teachers and see if they can smooth this over for you, instead of just letting the kid feel sad. And the message that they get is, yes, you feel sad, but it's not okay to feel sad, because I can't tolerate it as the parent. It makes me anxious as a parent to see you upset.
That's therapist in training Lori Gottlieb. Her article in The Atlantic is How to Land Your Kid in Therapy, about how parents, in trying to make their kids happy and maybe themselves happy, maybe having the opposite effect. And Lori, you connect this to helicopter parenting. We've talked about this here before. But you write this sort of micromanaging, hovering parent has led the University of Chicago to make a change in their first day of school. What are they doing?
They're really having trouble getting parents to actually leave. And so they have to sort of have, like, you know, like one group of kids is being led off to the dorms and the other group of parents is being led off campus.
By, what do you call them? Bagpipers.
Yes. Yeah. A processional. Right. Because they really have trouble getting the parents to leave. The parents are having a really hard time letting go. And one of the things I discuss in the piece is, why are parents feeling this need to cling to their kids to this degree? You know, somebody in the piece had said there's a difference between being loved and constantly monitored. And I think that that's a very important distinction to make.
Well, Lori Gottlieb, on the other hand, you know, there's been some resistance to your thinking that this unhappiness that you're seeing as a clinician, you know, as a therapist, can be directly drawn back to overprotective, overloving parents. Washington Post writer Jay Matthews had a column who said, you know, how can you be over involved helping my child learn, saying out loud what we want to pass on to them? That can't be overparenting. A parenting blogger, Janice Darcy, writes that your argument sounds good in theory, but in practice, you know, you don't want to ignore bullying. That's something we're trying to change.
No, of course not. And In fact, in the Washington, she actually is running a correction on that, because there's nothing in the piece about ignoring bullying. In fact, there's nothing in the piece about bullying whatsoever. Uh-huh. Bullying is serious and has to be dealt with, and parents should absolutely get involved, as should teachers, when that goes on. But I think what the experts that I interviewed were saying were that in routine social situations, which is very different from bullying, but in routine social situations, we're very quick to jump in. You know, somebody didn't get invited to a birthday party, and, you know, we're quick to jump in and kind of fix the problem. Or, you know, your kid didn't get into the school play, but her best friend did. And, you know, what can we do about that? I think those are things that kids need to learn how to negotiate for themselves. I spoke to a preschool teacher who said that she would see parents at sign-in where if the parent saw that another child grabbed a toy from her child, the parent would get very anxious about this and say, oh, my gosh, you know, that was my kid's toy. And aren't you going to do anything about that? That kid grabbed my kid's toy. And the teacher was saying, you know, the kids need to be able to figure this out a little bit. Of course, they teach them about not grabbing, but they also have to do a little bit of figuring this out on their own, too. They're guided, but they're not micromanaged. And I think that's the difference.
And you say the teachers that spoke to you anonymously did so because they were afraid to lose their jobs. They feel they can't teach these sort of social skills and, you know, how to deal with disappointment, things like that, because of parents who won't allow it. But, you know, getting back to some of this criticism of this thinking, Isn't it possible that there's depression, there's a sort of an unhappiness that you can have in your 20s that might have nothing to do with your parents? It might have to do with, first of all, genetic depression. It might have to do with peer pressure.
Absolutely. There are so many factors that contribute to, you know, why somebody is feeling the way that they're feeling or what they're experiencing. But, you know, so I'm not saying that because parents are this way, this is why people come to therapy. I'm saying there are certain people that, you know, had this kind of parenting and are really kind of struggling now because they just don't have the skills or the experience to negotiate day-to-day life a little bit better. And so I'm simply asking people to look at what they're doing with their kids. We're all parents who want our kids to be happy. We're all parents who want, you know, our kids to have a nice life. And so let's look at, you know, what our role is and what we can do to actually help them versus really kind of being intrusive. There's a big difference between being attached and involved and being kind of intrusive and overbearing.
Mm. One last question for you, Lori. Again, the title of your article in The Atlantic is How to Land Your Kid in Therapy. Not everybody can afford therapy. Is this a socioeconomic story? Is this something that some families have the luxury, a problem some families have the luxury of having?
You know, I think in some ways it might be, but I also think that something culturally is going on where, you know, we're very much in love with happiness in a new way. I think that you know, earlier on, I think people really wanted, you know, sort of a sense of contentment. And now happiness kind of means for a lot of people that we have to be happy in all ways and at every moment. That book, The Happiness Project, was written by somebody who wrote, "It's not that I wasn't happy. I was perfectly happy. I just thought I should be happier." And then, you know, people are having these sort of like happiness project groups all over the country, and it's this huge bestseller. And I think the reason that book has resonated with so many people is that people really feel that, you know, they should be happier in some way. And I think we project that onto our kids in a lot of ways, that it's not okay that you're unhappy about this thing that happened, you know, for more than 2 hours. You know, we don't want you to experience that kind of unhappiness. And so we're really taking the temperature of our kids' feelings in ways that, you know, maybe they don't need that much in terms of recovery, that they actually are more resilient and more capable of coming up with solutions to whatever is going on than we give them credit for. So, you know, we need to be present for our kids. We need to be attuned to our kids. But true attunement is not saying, I know that this is really difficult, but let's figure out a solution. It's, what do you think about this? How do you think you can get through this? And we're there to guide them. And, you know, it reminds me of that person in the article who had said she told her parents that she was really bad at math, and her parents said, "Oh, no, honey, you just have a different learning style." So, I think it's like, it's not okay to be ordinary. It's not okay to tell our kids you're not the best at something. We don't want to tell them that because we feel like, well, that's really damaging to their sense of self-esteem. And in fact, we want them to have really, you know, genuine self-esteem, not this externalization that a lot of people are growing up with.
Lori Gottlieb, her article, again, How to Land Your Kid in Therapy, is in The Atlantic. Lori, thanks so much for, I'm sure, starting some thoughts going in our listeners' minds. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.